Restoration, Floral Native Nursery and Restoration, where the wild things grow. More information about native plants and drought-tolerant landscape design is available at 14388 Meridian Road, Chico, and at floralnativenursery.com or call 530-892-2511, and by Grocery Outlet of Chico. Independent owner and operator Chris Hostetler offers local and brand name groceries, organic items, and more. Grocery Outlet of Chico is open weekdays from 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. and at 8 a.m. on weekends at their new location at 2157 Pillsbury Road in the Trader Joe's Center. And you can also find them on Facebook and at groceryoutlet.com. And coming up next is Zephyr News.
Welcome back to Zephyr News, a weekly production of FM 90.1 KZFR Chico. Zephyr News is broadcast each Thursday evening from 7 to 7:30 p.m. This week's show features a contribution from Chico Soul, the Sacramento Observer, and the California Report. Segments from KZFR community members include coverage of the Chico City Council meeting by Hope Brianna Campbell, election results and local news coverage by David Foos, and a segment on helping veterans by Hope Brianna Campbell.
This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News. The Chico City Council is taking a closer look at a proposal that could change the way people visit and do business in the city's downtown core. The possibility of offering free downtown parking. City leaders continue searching for ways to support downtown businesses to attract more visitors and strengthen economic activity in one of Chico's most important commercial districts. Supporters of the proposal argue that parking fees can discourage some people from visiting downtown, especially when shopping centers and other commercial areas offer free parking. They believe eliminating parking charges could make downtown more welcoming, encourage longer visits, and increase customer traffic for local businesses. Business owners have often pointed to parking as a major concern for customers. Some say visitors avoid downtown because they don't want to worry about parking meters, time limits, or other parking citations. Advocates of free parking believe removing these barriers can make it easier for residents and visitors to enjoy downtown restaurants, shops, entertainment venues, and community events. Mike O'Brien states at the Chico City Council meeting.
Thank you, Mayor. Just give a quick overview and turn over to Director Ottoboni and Mr. Alimi. I'm sure they've got some discussion points, but generally speaking, at our City Council meeting on May 5th, we directed this issue to come back or go back to Internal Affairs and was regarding a P-bid parking proposal. And it kind of had some different iterations. And at that Internal Affairs Committee meeting, Mr. Leamy came to what I think was an effort to find a compromise, to find some way to get this passed. And the compromise, in a nutshell, was to essentially take advantage of our summer season and then run this through December of this year, provide 2 hours of free parking in the parking lots and long-term parking lots, not the street parking. and provide additional wayfinding signage to direct patrons to the parking lots to identify the free parking areas. And there was some determination that staff needed to make if the interaction of the kiosk would be required to park for free.
Following up at the Chico City Council meeting, Brendan Ottoboni also states that
in follow-up to the discussion, yeah, the new proposal was presented for two-hour free parking in the lots, as Councilmember O'Brien mentioned. So we looked into that, evaluated its capabilities, what those logistics operationally would look like. So a couple notes or data points, I guess. Looking at July through December in 2025, the revenue amounts in those lots totaled approximately $65,000. What that would mean in terms of a two-hour free parking is kind of hard to exactly determine. I would say the majority of the parking durations that we see in the lots is between 1 and 2 hours in terms of the total fiscal impact. I would venture to guess somewhere in the $40,000 to $50,000 range. We confirmed with our vendors that two-hour free parking is possible in lots. It would require interaction with the kiosk or the app. Essentially, you'd have to create a parking session and 2 hours could be given for free. So we do have the capability of doing that. Some of the discussion in internal affairs with this concept, I believe was brought up by Sergeant Lefkowitz, was the impact of students with free parking in the lots, the higher utilization by students at Chico State could be a negative impact. Director Lipsky brought up a good point in terms of metrics. What are we looking for in terms of what are the outcomes we're looking for that could be measurable? One discussion was parking occupancy. So we kind of looked into that. I think that might be a little misleading because of the student impact might be higher occupancy that doesn't necessarily correlate to increased patronage or sales in the downtown.
Council members are expected to weigh both the potential benefits and the financial impacts of any parking changes. The discussion may include reviewing parking utilization data, considering pilot programs, or exploring alternative approaches that could encourage downtown visits while protecting city revenues. This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News.
On the special election and primary races, and Pride events happening in Chico this month. In special election news, Republican Assemblyman James Gallagher has won the race to complete the term of the late Representative Doug LaMalfa, capturing just over 62% of the vote as of June 3rd. As for the District 1 primary race, since it's been redrawn by Proposition 50, Gallagher and Democrat Mike McGuire are in the lead for the race and will likely face each other in November. At a Democratic watch party at FarmStar on June 2nd, District 3 Supervisor Tammy Ritter shared her thoughts on the special election.
Well, I think LaMalfa's untimely passing definitely contributed to a strange election season, with us having a special election at the same time as the primary, and having more than one ballot sent out in the old CD1 is definitely a challenge for people. And I think that that's probably contributing to the very low return that we're seeing as well.
So, Ritter is referencing the low voter turnout in Butte County this election season. Out of the nearly 127,000 registered voters, only 35,000, or 27%, voted in the county.
As I know that people are often more focused on a general election than a primary election, but I feel like this was a pretty important primary. Why?
Another watch party attendee, Annie Kavanaugh, commented on the District 1 race between Gallagher and McGuire.
Senator McGuire has come and built a very strong foundation in this district by going to all the corners of the district and meeting people and hearing what they need. Because he's going to go up against Gallagher, and it's going to be a very clear fight, very clear for people to see what kind of representation do they really want for the North State.
In the California governor's race, Republican Stephen Hilton is leading with nearly 28% of the vote, followed by Democrats Javier Becerra and Tom Steyer. Becerra is in second place with just over 25% of the vote. In other news, it's Pride Month, and contributor and board member Nancy Park covered the breadth of events happening in Chico over the next few weeks to celebrate the LGBTQIA+ community and the community as a whole. Headlining June Pride Month is the Chico Pride Festival, themed All Together Now. It will be this Saturday, June 6, from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. in the City Plaza. The event is hosted by Stonewall Chico and will feature over 60 booths, including info booths from government agencies and nonprofits, to arts, jewelry, and food vendors, and much more, as well as local performing artists entertaining attendees throughout the day. Just across the plaza, Allies Pub will be throwing a garden party where adult festival goers can enjoy a live DJ and alcoholic refreshments. There will also be a Pride after party at Duffy's Tavern, starting at 9 p.m., for those wanting to extend the day's festivities. Art activities this month include a drink and draw event at Argus on June 10th and a craft workshop hosted by Claire Fong at Chico Chai on June 14th. Next Saturday, June 13th, drag artists will be performing at Roselle's Bar and Lounge, and Free Bird Yoga has free sessions every Friday this month. Pride event coordinator Blue Martinez, who also serves as Stonewall's transgender and gender nonconforming program coordinator, hopes the variety of activities attracts people from all walks of life, not just those who identify as LGBTQ+, to unite the community and promote understanding. This has been Patrice for Chico Soul. Follow the latest at chicosoul.org. At chicosoul.org, you can also subscribe to our free newsletter, The Little Sun, to get notified about new content and hear directly from our writers. That's chicosoul.org.
This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News. At a recent meeting of the Chico Noon Exchange Club, members heard from Tony Schaffer, Executive Director of the Veteran Executive Corporation, to organize rehabilitative services, better known as VECTORS. He was also joined by Larry Langwell, the organization's president and CEO, to share information about the work VECTORS is doing to support veterans in the Chico area. In Chico's enterprise record, it states that VECTORS provides a holistic approach that serves veterans in need and has built many partnerships in the community. It also states VECTORS collaborates with as many agencies and service providers as necessary to produce strong bonds that foster the growth of its residents to become self-reliant individuals in society. For nearly 30 years, Vectors has focused on helping veterans facing challenges such as homelessness, financial hardship, and difficulties transitioning back to civilian life. The nonprofit has been provided housing for veterans in Chico since 1996 and has become an important part of the community's network of support services. Also in Chico Enterprise Record, Jeffrey L. Nighthouse opened its doors to provide services to 15 residents in 2005 and is a key component in the community continuum of care and an integral process in the cycle of homelessness for veterans. The current services offered through Vectors include a clean and sober living environment, transitional housing, referrals for specialized treatment programs, assistance with budgeting and financial management, coordination of services through the Department of Veterans Affairs, case management, and life skills development. These programs are intended to help veterans build a strong foundation for long-term success. Vectors is able to address the many challenges veterans may face, whether those challenges are involving housing, employment, healthcare, or social support. The organization's philosophy is that successful outcomes are often the result of strong community partnerships that are working together toward a common goal. As communities across California continue to search for solutions to homelessness and housing insecurity, programs that focus on veterans remain an important part of the broader effort. Through partnerships, supportive housing, and individualized assistance, Vectors continues its mission of helping those who served our country find stability, opportunity, and hope for the future. This is Hope Rihanna for Zephyr News.
Dadahee Islands add new burden to Black America.
Hi, this is Faye from Gay Man Play for Zephyr News. This article was published May 6, 2026, written by Willie Blackmore and brought to you by The Observer. The rush to build gigantic data centers powering the nation's AI boom, such as Elon Musk's massive Colossus facility near Memphis, usually draws community pushback because they generate dangerous levels of air pollution. But a new study raises another environmental hazard. The huge amounts of energy data centers require are heating up nearby communities. Researchers call it the Dadahee Island effect. It's an apt name considering how similar these temperature increases are to those caused by the urban heat island effect, a significant rise in temperatures in communities that lack shady green spaces and have an abundance of heat-absorbent surfaces like metal or asphalt. And Black people are 52% more likely than whites to reside in such areas. The Dadahee Island study, which is yet to be peer-reviewed, examined data centers in rural areas to determine whether those facilities caused increases in nearby surface temperatures. Researchers analyzed 20 years of temperature data gathered from communities adjacent to 6,000 different data centers across the country. They concluded that the opening of a data center, the researcher focused on so-called AI hyperscalers, supersized for facilities like Colossus, led to an average temperature increase of 3.6 degrees Fahrenheit. For some data centers, the temperature spike reached 16.4 degrees. The heat island effect was apparent as far as 6.2
2 miles away from a data center. Study co-author Andrea Mariani of the Earth Observation Group at the University of Cambridge in England told CNN that the Dadahi Island effect, quote, could have dramatic impacts on society. The study analyzed surface temperature measurements, not outdoor ambient temperatures, which are generally lower even when it's very hot outside. Think about the notion of frying an egg on the sidewalk. The air itself is hot, maybe in the 90s or triple digits, but the concrete is even hotter. Still, heat radiating from surfaces, the urban heat island effect, increases daytime air temperatures by up to 7 degrees, according to the EPA. Not only are Black people far more likely to live in urban heat islands, but extensive research shows negative health impacts of increased heat exposure. Not only do urban heat islands increase the risk of heat-related illness and death, but also create conditions that decrease air quality. If running an AI data center in a rural or sparsely populated community can increase heat in the surrounding area, that effect is likely compounded when the data center is in a highly industrialized urban area, such as Memphis. And just like the emissions coming from the gas turbines that power the facility, it's Black people living nearby who bear the brunt of the impact. The post, Dadahi Islands Add New Burden to Black America, appeared first on Word in Black. All right, on that note, we are wrapping things up, and don't forget that if you would like to find the article yourself, it is on The Observer. And this was Faye for Zephyr News.
This is David Foose reporting for Zephyr News. Tuesday's elections had low voter turnout. In Butte County, about 30% of eligible voters voted. That's 37,000 out of 127,000 eligible. In the race for governor statewide, Steve Hilton is leading Javier Becerra 28% to 25%, with Tom Steyer coming in third. Riverside County Sheriff Chad Bianco received 11% of the vote. Steyer spent $200 million of his own money, and it looks as if he won't make it out of the primary. Butte County voted 32% for Steve Hilton, 19% for Chad Bianco, 17% for Tom Steyer, and 15% for Javier Becerra. Katie Porter came in fifth with just 5% of the vote. In the race for Butte County Board of Supervisors, District 2, it was Peter Durfee over Marianne Paiva, 62% to 38%. Tammy Ritter ran unopposed for Butte County Board of Supervisors, District 3. In the race for District 1, U.S. House of Representatives, to complete the late Doug LaMalfa's term, statewide James Gallagher won with 63% of the vote, increasing the Republicans' majority in the U.S. House of Representatives. Gallagher was endorsed by President Trump. State Senator Mike McGuire, a Democrat, and Democrat Audrey Denny each got about 18% of the vote. In Butte County, Gallagher received 55% of the vote to 24% for Denny and 21% for McGuire. In the race for District 1 U.S. House of Representatives, the full two-year term, Gallagher was leading with 47% of the vote to 38% for McGuire and 13% for Denny, making it likely that Gallagher and McGuire will face off in November. In the race for State Assembly District 3, Dom Belza leads two fellow Republicans with 46% of the vote. Jamie Johansson trails with 29%, and former Chico Mayor Andrew Coolidge with 25%. Oroville City Council met on Tuesday evening. Council approved a draft version of the 2026 Speed Zone Engineering and Traffic Survey, covering 53 different road segments. If the final version of the survey is adopted, three segments will have their speed limits reduced by 5 miles per hour each, those being Long Bar Road from the city limits to Orange Avenue, Lower Wyandotte Road from Olive Highway to Ora Garden Ranch Road, and Table Mountain Boulevard from Nelson Avenue to the city limits. Two segments will have their speed limits increased from 45 to 55 miles per hour, those being Garden Drive from Highway 70 to Table Mountain Boulevard and Larkin Road from the city limits to Ora Dam Boulevard. The City of Chico announced that the South Park Drive Rehabilitation Project will begin on June 8th. R&R Horn Contractors will lead the construction efforts to rehabilitate the roadway surface from Cypress Street to Centennial Avenue in Lower Bidwell Park. The project will be similar to work completed last summer on Peterson Memorial Drive on the north side of Lower Park. Care will be taken to ensure no harm is done to the roots of mature trees along the drive. Work will include roadway reconstruction and new paving, shoulder backing, new and updated signage, thermoplastic markings and striping, new asphalt on pedestrian paths, and new vehicle exclusion gates. Construction is expected to continue through the beginning of August. South Park Drive will be closed to all pedestrian and vehicular traffic during construction. The U.S. Forest Service announced a 2-week lane closure on the Skyway in Chico beginning this past Monday, June 1st. The right lane heading uphill to Paradise will be closed at the entrance to the new Forest Service fire station at the site of the old Feather River Work Center. Workers will be paving and connecting the entrance to the station to the Skyway. Chico State announced that parking structure 1 at the corner of West 2nd and Cherry Streets will be closed for the summer for repairs to maintain the structure. Parking services will also take the opportunity to repaint stalls, directional arrows, and accessible paths of travel. New signs will be installed throughout the garage. The work is scheduled from June 1st through August 15th. The Butte County Department of Behavioral Health announced the relocation of Chico Stepping Stones and the Chico Community Counseling Center to a newly expanded facility at 254 Cohasset Road, Suites 100 and 150. The grand opening celebration will be June 8th from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m., and the public is invited. And finally, Caltrans announced that it has awarded $23 million across 58 local projects statewide to enhance climate resiliency, reduce greenhouse gas emissions, improve bicycle and pedestrian safety, and increase natural disaster preparedness. Locally, the Pasquena Band of Nomiaki Indians in Tehama County received $256,000 to enhance safety and connectivity for pedestrians and bicyclists and to improve the overall quality of life for tribal members. This is David Foos for Zephyr News.
From KQED.
While California is ruling out first-of-its-kind regulations pushing manufacturers to cut plastic pollution, one of the deadlines for producers is Monday. Here's KQED science reporter Danielle Venton.
In a scene from The Graduate, a businessman tries to set a young Dustin Hoffman on a prosperous career.
I just want to say one word to you.
Yes, sir.
Plastics.
Since the mid-century, the production of plastic has increased hundreds of times. It's found in remote Arctic wildlife and babies' poop. Production is expected to triple in the next 25 years. California is trying to halt the trend. A state bill passed in 2022 makes manufacturers responsible for reducing and helping clean up the plastic they use, including ensuring all their packaging is recyclable or compostable by 2032. June 1st is a deadline for producers to submit baseline data about their use.
I feel like every day something new comes out about the potential dangers associated with microplastics. This is an opportunity for us to reduce that material that's being sold into the state in a very meaningful way.
Zoe Heller directs CalRecycle, the department overseeing the implementation of the law. She says this is the biggest thing the department has done. Industry has asked for more time to comply and said food prices may rise. But a state analysis indicated consumers would save money overall, bearing less cleanup costs and avoiding illness. For the California Report, I'm Danielle Venton.
In a controversial move, state regulators have approved major changes to a key state climate program. California's Air Resources Board voted Friday to create a $4 billion fund for big polluters to invest in decarbonization projects. But climate transit and affordability housing advocates worry it might mean significantly less money for their programs. Judson True with San Francisco's Municipal Transit Agency says cap and investment funds have helped the agency maintain its infrastructure.
Transit, including Muni, is crucial to achieving our climate protection goals and ensuring affordability. And this vote is a setback for both of those causes.
The decision comes months after industries warned that compliance with